Hi, welcome to the China Unscripted podcast. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshda.
Well, I think the biggest news in the past, well, months, years, all of human history, is that Xi Jinping and Putin sure know how to cook.
At least Xi Jinping does.
I feel like this could be like a new like reality TV show, like Cooking with Authority.
Oh, that's good. I was going to say Cooking with Dictators, but that's so much better.
That's why you're the human ninja.
That's true. So Xi Jinping was in Russia ahead of the biggest war game since the fall of the Soviet Union. But there was this bizarre photo op, I guess you'd call it, where Putin leads Xi Jinping in making traditional Russian pancakes. Blini, I believe, is what they're called. Probably butchered that. But
our Russian viewers should write in and tell you how to pronounce it.
That's a good point. It was amazing watching Xi Jinping and Putin try and make pancakes. And Xi Jinping dominated Putin. Like, Putin's pancake was all lopsided and deformed. Xi Jinping's perfectly round, perfectly cooked.
Well, there's a good explanation for that, you know, because when Xi Jinping was younger, he was sent to the countryside.
To make pancakes?
Well, no, but like when you're sent to the countryside, sometimes like you've got to kind of do everything yourself.
Including making your own pancakes.
During the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah, but those Cultural Revolution pancakes.
But like everyone was in like a poor, like hard situation in China in the Cultural Revolution. Whereas, you know, Putin is like KGB, you know, like maybe he could always just order people to make him food. So he didn't really have to do it.
I don't know.
Completely specious argument.
Absolutely, there's no evidence to back any of this up.
All we know for fact is that currently Putin is not as good as making pancakes, blini, as Xi Jinping.
I was trying to let Putin off the hook a little bit.
Why?
Yeah, I shouldn't have.
But we also found this footage. Do you remember what year it was, Matt?
It was earlier this year.
Where Putin was in China and they made Putin make dumplings.
Yeah, they had Putin and Xi Jinping came by this like table where there were, you know, four or five Chinese chefs lined up with like the dumpling making stuff.
Yeah. So this is a thing in their relationship, cooking.
That they can make food together.
Well, like this was probably the same trip where Putin got the friendship medal, right?
Oh, that's right. After the long train ride.
Oh yes. I mean, this is serious.
Serious stuff. Well, I mean, Matt, you've had me over to your place to make dumplings before. So, I mean, obviously, Xi Jinping is going to have his authoritarian buddy over for dumpling making, too.
Well, Chris, you were much better at it than Putin.
That's right. Shelley, did you see that footage?
I have not seen this footage.
Putin's dumpling was garbage.
Like, was the stuff falling out of the middle, or?
It looked like a dog wouldn't eat it.
I do have to say, though, that, like, making dumplings is harder than making a pancake. I mean, come on. Like, the little folds and stuff like that, mm-hmm.
Easy. I'm actually pretty good at it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up making them, but I still, like, mine kind of look raggedy on the ends. I never, like, perfected the like, little fold that makes it, like, mm-hmm. look exactly like an even zigzag.
Some point, they become burritos.
Well, no, I'm not that bad. But, like, I feel like there was a... I saw Crazy Rich Asians, and the scene that I related to the most was there's this like dumpling making scene where like all of these very wealthy Asian people who probably don't cook for themselves on a normal basis still have to like make dumplings by hand for their dumpling party because like culturally you have to do that. So it was like a very, you know, like touching, relatable moment.
Sounds so stereotypical.
Uh-huh, where there's like food involved in an Asian movie.
Yeah, well, I remember in Flower Drum Song, they had a whole song about chop suey.
Wait, hold on. How do you know about Flower Drum Song? This is like a musical from like, what, the 50s or something? Nobody knows. Like, I've seen parts of it.
Well, if it involved chop suey, it was probably
It was definitely black and white. And it was about... What is the story? Okay, Chris, tell... Why do you know about...
Well, I know about it because I was in a high school production of Flower Drum Song.
You were what?
You know.
Wait, hold on.
Thinking back to that, there really weren't many Asian people in my school.
Uh-huh, and how many of them were in the school musical of Flower Drum Song?
Definitely most of the leads were white. But no, you couldn't tell because they drew like little black lines on the side of their eyes. So.
Oh my God.
So, you know, they looked Asian.
I was just about to say, at least you guys didn't tape your eyes, right?
Yeah, which is worse.
Like, the little lines, actually, that was like the Hollywood approved way of doing it back in like the 20s and stuff like that when, for, you know, like legal reasons, they couldn't have like miscegenation on screen. Like, you couldn't have like an Asian and a white character in love. So they just solved that by, like, doing stories where the Asian characters were all played by white people. Like,
weren't there Asian actors in the early 20th century?
Yeah, but, Anna Mae Wong famously could not get any roles in Hollywood.
Did you say
was
Anna Mae Wong?
Yeah. Anna.
Oh.
Mae.
God.
Not Anna Mae.
That was pretty exciting.
Yeah, no.
That's going to become my fan fiction pen name.
Oh, no. Anna Mae Wong. It's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
But she actually had to go to Europe. Like, she was born in L.A. or something. Like, she had to go to Europe to be an actor because she couldn't get any leading roles in Hollywood because they wouldn't, they couldn't have her with, like, a white man. Mm. And then I think there was, like, a famous Japanese guy who was, like a heartthrob. But then, yeah. Anyway. But, like, there was, do you know The Good Earth, the Pearl S. Buck?
Nope.
It's a famous novel that she wrote that is set in China in like the 30s or something like. No, that's too late. But it's set in China and like all the characters are Chinese and Hollywood made like this like very like famous well received movie where everybody in the film was a white person who had little like makeup around their eyes.
Madame Butterfly, the first woman who played Madame Butterfly was not Chinese. Well, not Asian.
Japanese. I mean, yeah. I guess there probably weren't a lot of Japanese opera singers.
Back then, that's a good point. That's a good defense of Yellowface, Shelley. I think that's what you were going for.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Yeah. I was defending Yellowface. Yeah.
By the way, I should just tell everyone that I played a sailor in Flower Drum Song, so there are no photos of me in Yellowface.
Okay, so you did not play an Asian character. You are absolved.
Yes, thank you.
That still seems like a really bizarre choice. Maybe, I wonder if your school picked it because, like, it was probably a pretty cheap musical to buy the rights
Could
to.
Could be. Could be. The other musical we did was a musical the drama professor wrote about Noah's Ark.
Oh, God.
It was great fun.
Well, meanwhile, we did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which was, like, probably the most money they've ever spent buying the rights to, like, a book. And then we did Annie Get Your Gun, but, like, the old racist version of it because didn't want to buy... Like, I guess it would have been more expensive to buy, like, the version of the book that was, like... the remake that was like popular in the late 90s when like it came back on Broadway.
What made the old version racist?
There was a song called I'm an Indian Too that Annie Oakley sings in the beginning where she like sings about like the Chippewa and like all these different Indian like tribes. She's an Indian too. And then like, you know,
that sounds beautiful. That's touching.
And makes
the hand or the mouth.
It's not good. That part was crossed out.
Oh, good.
And we didn't do that song.
Nice.
For some reason, my 95% white high school decided that maybe that wasn't the way to go.
Wow, sounds like a pretty woke high school back in the day. Although Matt, were you in any?
It reminds me actually of that Tim McGraw song, Indian Outlaw.
What?
You guys don't know this song.
We're not into country. I'm going to assume you're not.
I'm half Cherokee and half Chickasaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. You don't know this song?
No.
It's from like the 90s, I think. Anyway, it was popular when I was growing up. I don't know, in Northern California.
Hotbed of country music.
And I don't know why I know this song, but I do like know.
Got to give him credit for rhyming something that's Chippewa. Like, that's probably not a common rhyme.
Yeah, but then, like, you know, like, in the 90s, it was just, like, that's a cool song. And then later you look back on it and it's like, wait, is that, like...
I don't know if that's an excuse since my, like, literally there were five Asians at my school. I had a best friend who was black, and people used to call us the wrong names because we used to joke that, like, so there were so few minorities in my school that we just blended together and they could not tell the difference. But like, even my school realized that having that I'm an Indian too song would not be okay to do.
Yeah, so it's hard to explain. So they did cut that, at least from your version.
Yeah, although we also did a very awkward entire chorus concert where all the songs were African.
Oh, that's nice.
And then there was like a local African music group from the local college who was going to come play. And then they showed up and they were also all white.
Hmm.
So very, yeah. Very multicultural.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was in college, I needed like one extra credit my senior year. So I took an African drumming class. Guess how many of the students and teachers in that class were from Africa?
None.
That is correct. None.
Well, that's cool that, you know, it's something that is beloved by people outside in different cultures.
I feel like We're getting into really dangerous territory now, and let's go back to China and Putin and dumplings.
The safe territory of China and Russia.
Yeah.
Back to Cooking with Authority.
Cooking with Authority. I like that name.
Yeah, no, it's you heard it here first on China Unscripted.
We should produce that.
Yeah.
I think so.
Who else could be on that?
Duterte?
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, maybe you can cook some good Filipino food.
Oh, my gosh.
Hun Sen from Cambodia. Really, any of these, like, dictators.
I feel like this would be Duterte's dream, is to, like, make,
he's got an Emeril Lagasse kind of attitude. Like,
no. And you've got your favorite Filipino dish, Chris, is
Sizzling sisig.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm. You were eating that.
I wonder if he could do that.
Yeah.
Well,
or at least lumpia. Everyone knows lumpia, but they're kind of hard to make, right?
Well, is lumpia harder to make than pancakes? Not pancakes, but definitely harder than pancakes. Lumpia versus dumplings. What is
now,
more
now,
complicated?
Now, hold on, Shelley. You keep going back to this. You think pancakes are just the walk in the park to make.
No. I screw up pancakes all the time. But I'm just saying, as opposed to having something with the filling that you have to like then like close and like make look pretty, like it's less hard than that.
I don't know. I feel like you were kind of dismissing Putin's bad pancake a little bit.
I mean,
all the pressure of the cameras and, you know, he's probably hungry.
There's also lots of caviar and vodka.
Oh, yeah, they were taking shots of vodka together.
And they were also, like, piling on two different types of caviar. You know, the way the Russian peasants traditionally had pancakes.
There was like a lot of caviar in that shot. That was like one thing that I
remember. Well, I mean, a lot of caviar does kind of come from parts of Russia, so potentially they got a lot of it for cheap.
Mm.
No, that's so. But I like this idea of cooking with authority. So who else do we want to get on? Duterte can make some traditional dishes.
Since Duterte wanted to be like, what was it? Like he wanted to be Xi, Putin, and him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like this would be perfect for him.
Yeah. I wonder if Kim Jong-un can cook.
He can watch food being made.
he's the judge.
With a big smile.
No, he's the judge. They all make it for him, and he has to say, like, oh, this is my favorite.
Uh-huh. This is actually it's shaping up perfectly.
I feel like we could actually make this show, like a parody of the show, if we just took, like, the footage of the pancake making and the dumpling making, and we just dub it.
Or we could dress up in costumes. Matt, you can be Xi Jinping. We'll just draw some black lines on the side of your eyes. And
I was actually hoping I could be shirtless Putin.
I was like, Matt wants to be Putin. Are there any female dictators?
How many female dictators are
there? There was one. I forget the name or where they're from or if it even happened.
What?
Okay.
I think I had a dream.
like the person that's coming to mind now is Imelda Marcos, but like
Yeah, I mean, she didn't really rule though.
No. I'm not I'm just like trying to think.
Cuz Marcos was replaced. Well, Cory Aquino replaced Marcos, the Marcos regime, but she was democratically elected and also not particularly authoritarian.
Yeah, we're not just looking for female leaders. I was just wondering about...
There's plenty of female leaders.
female
Wu Zetian.
Yeah. Okay. We're gonna make this historical.
So like, what era was Wu Zetian?
Tang Dynasty, middle of it.
Yeah.
So like 800s AD, roughly.
I mean, you don't even have to go that back that far. I guess you could do Cixi or something if you really wanted to do like Chinese empresses.
Yeah. Wasn't Detective D set during Wu Zetian's reign?
That sounds right, but I also haven't, like...
You're not a Detective D fan?
I've never actually read any of the original... Did we have this talk about...
We've talked about Detective D on the show before.
Yeah.
So speaking of Chinese current events...
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we're really getting off topic. Like,
this, yeah, we were only off by like 1,200 years.
It's just that this like looking for authority thing, it just... There's so much potential here.
That's right.
And this is why you listen to China Unscripted, because it's unscripted.
Yes, we all...
Very unscripted sometimes.
Well, so anyways, I think maybe listeners would like to hear a little bit more about some of the behind the scenes for that recent episode about Cambodia we did.
Oh, right, how China is destroying Cambodia.
Yeah, basically so. Standard Belt and Road story, paying for infrastructure, giving... loans, bad debt.
The same sad story. Although in Cambodia's place, like in Cambodia's case, it's not just the $5 billion they own China. That's like 42% of the country's entire debt is to China. Don't worry, I'm sure they can like give away a port or like, I don't know, some forests or something.
And it's incredible when you consider the history between the two countries that, you know, the Chinese Communist Party helped support the Khmer Rouge, which killed a quarter of the Cambodian population, and yet now...
Yeah, and including a lot of ethnically Chinese people who were living in Cambodia. They were like a major target of the Khmer Rouge, and the Communist Party not only didn't care, but like encouraged them to kill the Chinese who were resisting the Khmer Rouge.
Well, you know, let bygones be bygones, right?
I mean, there's a lot to do with that whole situation that's not exactly been resolved in Cambodia. After all, Hun Sen was in the Khmer Rouge.
Their former general.
Yes, their current prime minister, Hun Sen, was a soldier in the Khmer Rouge.
Now, he did defect and say, what, that China's the root of all evil? Well, something like that.
Hun Sen defected, but my understanding is that he defected more because he was going to be purged rather than because he had an ideological disagreement with the Khmer Rouge.
Genocide, no problem, but coming after me, oh yeah. But so now he's being heavily supported by the same Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, well, so this story that you guys probably saw on China Unscripted, how China's destroying Cambodia, we looked at...
They didn't see that on China Unscripted,
on China Matt. Uncensored. We have so much to... We're doing so many things, I get mixed up. So the episode on China Uncensored, we looked at this seaside town or city called Sihanoukville, and this has sort of been set up as a kind of special... investment zone for Chinese companies. And, you know, I hadn't heard about this until we actually were in Oslo when we interviewed former Cambodian parliament member Musso Kua, who kind of told us about what's happening in Cambodia. And then a few weeks ago, I emailed her and I asked her for some information about this. And then ultimately she put me in touch with a guy who she knew, who then put me in touch with a local in that city. And that local, we hired him to shoot some footage for us of those casinos. So
Was he at all concerned about his safety?
Well, you know, that was the first conversation I had with this guy. And his name is Mai, M-A-I. Well, you know that because he's in the credits. He didn't want to hide. And I said to him, you know, first, it's risky what you're going to do. Are you sure you want to do this? He said, yes, I'm an activist. I want to do it. I said, you know, we can't protect you. We don't have authority to do that. And what I'm asking you to shoot could be risky. And again, he was just like very adamant that he wanted to do it. It was important to him.
Oh, that's really cool.
So, you know, and it's good because so far, like 90,000 people have seen the footage that he shot and have seen the story. And I think he's happy with that. So that was actually really interesting to be able to get that on the ground footage. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really done that very much. But it sort of worked out. So after, the episode aired, I wrote an email to Sokua and the other guy she put me in touch with to thank them mm-hmm. for finding me this cameraman. And then Sokua's like, oh, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she like, the way she wrote the email was like the other guy that she put me in touch with happened to be like a Cambodian prince. Like he was royalty. And I had no idea.
You were talking to a prince?
I was like, emailing a prince. I was like, hey, you know, how's it going? Like, do you know anyone who can shoot some footage for us? Like, is that...
Thanks, dude.
Is that normally the conversation you have with a prince? Like, I don't think so. But like, I didn't know that. And like, I was on a first name basis with this prince because that's how Sokua addressed him.
You heard it first. We are in good with Cambodian royalty.
I don't know about that, but certainly this guy was very, very helpful. But I'm not sure I want to name him. That's why I'm leaving him out. But
you got so excited about that, you're like, it showed up on all of the...
My audio spiked?
Yeah, it spiked across all three lines. That was pretty impressive.
But so there's clearly a significant amount of political opposition in Cambodia to Hun Sen. It's just that right now they haven't been able to do anything about it. But maybe...
Well, they were able to do something about it until he cracked down and dissolved the opposition party. And
that's the way to do it if you want to be president for life. You got to
get in there, right?
Make sure the opposition parties are illegal.
Yeah, like the dictator's handbook.
Well, that's what it is. That's why one party rule is so helpful, right? You get rid of the other parties, and then you can give people the vote. But since there's only one party in one candidate,
I mean, frankly, you should just do it the way the Chinese Communist Party does it. You just take the shortcut, like. Don't bother with the vote. You just have the one party.
Well, no, technically, Xi Jinping was elected president by the National People's Congress.
Which has so many parties.
After the Communist Party told the National People's Congress how to vote. Because they're loyal. And that's the key about China. They're all loyal.
I don't know if they told them. I mean, the National People's Congress, they're probably just smart people, you know?
A lot of things probably can just remain unsaid.
Yes. I mean, there are other parties. I think there's 8 other political parties in China.
We ever done anything on that? We should. Maybe
I don't think
do
we've
an
done
episode.
a whole episode just about the political parties.
You wrote a script about that, didn't you?
I did, and it's still kind of sitting there on the back burner. But basically, there's about a third of the National People's Congress is other parties. The thing is, though, that unlike in the U.S., for example, where each party is independent, in China, all of the political parties are under the authority of the United Front, which is part of the Communist Party.
The good old United Front.
Well, because you have to show unity, national unity in politics. Everything in China is very harmonious, mm-hmm. not like the chaotic West.
With their democracy.
Too much freedom in the West, I think.
That's that's the philosophy. So everything's very harmonious there in China, they can technically say correctly that they have a multi-party system in the National People's Congress.
I mean, why bother though? Like, why?
Well, I mean, it's just for the same reason they call Xi Jinping president, even though General Secretary of the Communist Party is his important title.
But, you know, the president thing, like, that's understandable because that is a great piece of propaganda right there. But, like, how many people know anything about Chinese governance to the point where, like, pointing out that the National People's Congress has 8 other political parties would be able to, convince them that, like, China's actually a democracy or something like that. Like, most people won't.
I think there's a lot of people who don't really know much about China, but, you know, they hear about the president and they've heard, you know, technically there have been village elections, for example. So there's this idea that there's some sort of democracy in China. And even though it's all tightly controlled and a lot of it's just totally bogus, it kind of makes people outside of China erroneously think that the Communist Party is, you know, reforming, or there's some sort of the will of the people.
You know, I don't think they even know about the Communist Party. It's just, oh, China has a president.
And there's a Congress. They do things.
Yeah.
I mean, most... How many people even know what the U.S. Congress does?
Right. I mean, like, do people even have civics classes anymore? I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in, you know, we saw a news report about a proposed bill that would alter the family planning office. And it's like the language here is it's a proposed bill before Congress, but that's not actually like, it's not like the Schoolhouse Rock version of how a bill becomes a law. That doesn't apply in China. Essentially, the Communist Party wants something to be done, but increasingly over the last, you know, 20 years, but especially the last 5 years or so under Xi Jinping, they've taken this route of having a kind of supposed legal framework to pass laws so that instead of things seeming like they're arbitrarily done by the Communist Party, they seem like they're done through this rule of law mechanism. But that's not actually what the rule of law is in China. It's actually rule by law. And the Communist Party utilizes the law to create an artificial framework for the things that they're going to just do anyway. They just, you know, now it seems like, oh, you have a bill, and they vote, and then it becomes a law. And, you know, we just have to remember that the National People's Congress has never once rejected a law that the Communist Party has proposed.
Well, they've all been so good.
That is almost certainly the reason. And you know what's they're so good that all of the other political parties also agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's like their court system. Like, there's pretty much close to 100%
conviction. It's a 99.6% conviction rate.
Yeah, that's just how good the courts are, the police are at getting their guy. Man, the U.S. could really learn a lot from China.
It's their efficient...
It's meritocracy.
Meritocracy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm going to go puke.
Why are you going to go puke?
No, just the whole, like, meritocracy... it just like
China is a meritocracy
run by technocrats.
Go live under that meritocracy for a little bit. See how great it is.
It's true that those people in power are the most skilled at certain things. For example, power struggle.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. It's not easy to be good at power struggling.
No, I have still failed to purge you.
Yeah, but I'm the only one who knows how to use this recording equipment, so that's my leverage.
What did I study in undergrad, Matt? You don't even know me.
I know that you have a master's degree in classical music composition. I don't know what your undergrad is.
Classical music composition and recording technologies.
Oh, really?
Okay, I see. So you were gonna like
wait, hold on. So you're telling me that you know how to do all this?
Yeah, maybe.
How come never once have you set this up or even really helped me set up?
I've offered and you've been like, no, I got it.
I don't know if that's how it went down.
I don't recall that as being how it went down.
Yeah.
But I like how you had like a double major, so if just in case the classical like music composition didn't work out.
I mean, it was such a sure thing, but
you could fall back on the audio recording.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's good that, you know, you're now deeply in student debt because of all this.
Now Chris is going to puke.
This is why I'm trying to purge you, Matt.
I mean, I really do deserve to be purged, but the trick is just to play a critical role so that you can't purge me so easily.
Yeah, that's true. I'm stuck between wanting to purge you and then just binging on your abilities.
Oh my gosh. Bulimia joke. Now we can really talk about high school.
Oh, Shelley, it's dark.
That is dark. Is there any other China-related topics that we want to discuss, Chris?
So one thing that's been in the news that we haven't really covered on China Uncensored yet is the actress, Chinese actress Fan Bingbing, is apparently disappeared for the last 2 months.
And what do you mean by disappeared, Shelley? That's a wrong grammar, right?
Well, it, what I mean is she's been disappeared. It's very hard to say,
actually. Specific Chinese word for people who have vanished. It's, it does get translated as disappeared.
Like to be disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to give you a window to explain something, but then you didn't pick up on it, so I had to explain it. So.
Okay, yes, please teach me about Chinese grammar, Chris. Which word is are you talking about?
I forget the actual word.
Okay.
You mean like shuanggui, the detention?
No.
No, no, it's not shuanggui.
Shuanggui is specific to...
For Communist Party members.
Actually, yeah. They're also replacing that with something new and improved, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
like the way that there are no longer re-education through labor camps.
Well, let's go back.
They're vocational schools, right.
let's go back and like explain what you mean by disappeared.
Oh, okay. Well, what I mean in her case is that she has not appeared in public for the last 2 months. And there is, like, but in other cases when disappeared, it means probably disappeared by authorities, like taken somewhere secretively and you're either under house arrest or in a black jail or somewhere where you basically can't, you know, go out in public. Yeah. In Fan Bingbing's case, it's not clear, I think, what has happened to her, or even if it's political at all. I mean, frankly, she could possibly have broken her arm. And not...
Well, she did get a lowered social credit rating.
Yeah, there's speculation because her name has been, she's one of the most prominent actresses in China, and her name's been bandied about with, like, kind of, like, some political things going on. But then also, she's been criticized recently for a tax evasion scheme whereby, like, a lot of actors get paid a certain real amount, but then their contracts... They have a fake contract that has, like, a lower amount, so they don't get taxed as much on their earnings. And she was maybe, like, brought up as, like, a person who, like, was, like, you know, an example of this or a connection. So there's speculation that she might be made an example of, like, that she might actually get in, like, serious trouble for this, and that's why she hasn't been seen anywhere. But for a lot of people, I think... Because she's been in some movies in Hollywood. She's been in, like, an X-Men movie. She's, like... So it's, like, she was in the Chinese version of Iron Man 3.
Oh, yeah, that was her.
But, like, it's an example of, like, how, like, China's authoritarian government, like, shows through the cracks that they're trying to maintain this facade of, like, yes, we're elected president and we have an
entertainment industry just like Hollywood.
Yeah, but like if you somehow step afoul of like political, like, you know,
people think like, oh, the old days of China, like under Mao, are gone, where people can just disappear,
right?
But it really isn't the case, because it's still anyone can suddenly find themselves on the wrong side of the Communist Party, and then just poof.
Yep, you are purged. So it's interesting that, like, this is now happening to not just, like, you know, like, Communist Party members, or, like, you know, now it's happening to maybe, like, an actress that has some kind of international fame.
Which I wonder how the international reaction will affect how disappeared she stays.
Yeah, and I think, like, it'll also affect whether, like, she comes out and makes an apology for all of her wrongdoing, like a public confession, or, you know, it's very unclear what's that, or if, like, this is just a excuse for the reason they really want her. You know what I mean? Like, here comes the rumor mill. It's very...
Yeah. And what also is suspicious that, like, there hasn't even been, like, social media. Like, she hasn't... She could easily be like, hello, I'm not purged. Weibo. But
it could also alternatively be nothing political. Maybe she's in like drug rehab or something. I mean, if it happens in Hollywood, it could happen in the Chinese, I don't know what you call it, Chinese Hollywood.
Hollywood? I think that is a thing.
I just looked up Fan Bingbing, right? And, you know, like, all the news stories in the West are, like, things like, Fan Bingbing, Chinese X-Men actor disappears without a trace. Or, like, these are the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Gone missing, vanishes. Like, I think, like, this actually will... I wouldn't be surprised if she reappears suddenly because of, like, all of the speculation about her disappearing.
Yeah, international spotlight.
Yeah, it really helps. If it only helped for human rights activists as well.
They should be in more movies.
There you go.
I just hope nothing happens to Angela Baby. She's my favorite. You don't know Angela Baby?
No. I mean, I know the name, but where? What was she
I
in?
Mean, of course you know the name. Who could forget a name like that?
Angela Baby.
Yeah. I don't know if she's been in any movies that have come out in the West. I think she was in Tai Chi Zero, which I enjoyed. That was a good kung fu movie.
Tai Chi Zero? It sounds like one of those made-for-DVD ones that you just like buy in Chinatown.
No, this is recent high
theatrical
production.
Theatrical release?
Yeah. Well, in China or wherever. Huh, what?
All right.
Now, the way you said that was...
It was funny, and we were laughing because you made a joke.
I didn't. I just say things and people start laughing sometimes, or sometimes cry.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm distracted looking up Angela Baby, which is apparently one word.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't say Angela Baby. I said Angela Baby.
Uh-huh. Not like Anna Mae Wong.
Anna Mae Wong. Well, since we brought it back to the beginning, should we wrap this up? Everyone's nodding. You can't hear the nods, but... So thank you for listening to this episode of China Unscripted. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley John.
And I'm Matt Ganesda.
And we'll talk to you next time.